This is the Cubs Related Podcast. You can find this podcast on iTunes by searching Cubs Related. We'll be the first one that pops up. And if you're so kind, please, please leave us any type of rating, both good or bad. But we'll especially like the good ones. So tonight is the 1st of June, and unfortunately, the Cubs got swept. I can't believe I'm saying this, but they got swept by the San Diego Padres. They're two games below 500, and they start a three-game set against the other struggling Central team, the St. Louis Cardinals. Both are not doing well. With me is Corey, and we'll get into it all. Corey, what do you have for us?
Well, I just want to give a shout-out, pour one out, however you want to phrase it, to all the women of Chicago. And, you know, I don't know, maybe some men, maybe some of the men recording this podcast. If you have not heard via social media, it has come through the newswire. And by the newswire, I mean via his personal Twitter, that our first baseman, our fearless leader, our captain, Anthony Rizzo, is off the market, folks. He is engaged. So, congratulations to Anthony. You know, it's no big deal, Anthony. We'll all just, you know, deal with our broken hearts in our own way. And, you know, you don't have to worry about it.
Which wedding do you think will end up being the most fun, his or Brian's?
Do you actually think that's a question?
It was more rhetorical.
One of those two people drinks alcohol, the other doesn't. So I think that's and you know, from as best I can tell, I would take and I mean no offense to a friend of the podcast, Mike Bryant, but I would take an Italian wedding over, you know, a Las Vegas wedding, I think, any day. I would trust Rizzo's large Italian family to make that quite the affair.
Can you imagine Rizzo's dad's toast? I mean, based on what we saw for that World Series interview.
Like, are you implying that we're not going to be invited to hear it?
I mean, I'm going to be invited. I don't know about you, but we'll see.
I'm gonna let that dead air breathe for a minute, all right? I want that awkwardness to come through the speakers, because I think everybody listening maybe cringed a little bit at that one, Brendan.
Okay.
But yeah, so you know, congrats to Anthony. Best wishes to him and his fiance Emily, and hopefully, you know, we didn't really get any good fodder from the Bryant wedding. We got some good picks, but. In a similar regard, I think I'm trusting Rizzo maybe a little bit more, that maybe he'll share it with the fans a little bit. You know, maybe get some pics out, some funny videos. But you never know. It's none of our business. And yeah, so, you know, anyway, that's good news. I guess now we could just talk about, you know, do it like a wedding-related podcast. I'm not sure if anybody listening really wants to talk about the baseball team. You know, maybe tweet us and let us know. We can change the theme of the podcast. You know, we haven't done the podcast when the team hasn't been playing well, since we started in 2015. So, you know, we're down for whatever. We just got to, you know, you're the
podcast.
Audience. Yeah. This is the Cubs wedding related podcast.
That's where we're at. We win a World Series and now we're going to switch the theme to weddings. Okay.
Anyway. So I think, you know, we came to, I believe it was Monday night, we had already lost a game to the Padres.
Yeah.
You know, so not really too much of note has happened in between them.
They got swept.
Right. Correct me if I'm wrong. We came to you after Butler pitched.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lackey
pitched. After Hendricks pitched.
Hendricks, I'm all over the place.
Yeah, they all suck, so it's hard to keep track.
Yeah, I mean, well, and I guess like you, I haven't spent a lot of time, you know, really reliving the World Series champions getting swept by the Padres. So sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had Butler and Arrieta. You know, I really don't think that there's all too much to really get into here. I mean, I think Arrieta continues to look pretty good. His main problem now seems to be that with the lowered velocity, he's making, you know, one to three or so real bad pitches per game, and it seems to just be a question of if he gets got on him and what the timing of that is. And, but beyond that, I think he looks okay. I know you talked a lot of the last time and wrote recently about maybe not being as concerned about him as you were.
Correct.
And, I thought Eddie Butler looked pretty good. I thought it was, similar to what we've seen from him before, trying to attack the zone, good movement. And, really the story, I think, right now, while the pitching certainly isn't inspiring any confidence, is this sort of ungodly offense that they're performing at right now. And the amount of runners that they're leaving in scoring position, the amount of, just bad at-bats that we're seeing. And
it's like every inning they leave a guy on third base with two.
Yeah,
outs.
I mean that's really frustrating. I don't know that I can come up with a series that was more like frustrating than that. You know, there was the series.
I can think of one. It happened last week actually. I can think of right before the Padres series in LA. It was the same exact thing, man. It was a carbon copy of what they did in San Diego.
Well, but I mean, at least in LA, you can justify losing those games. I think in San Diego, it's a little more difficult to swallow. You can kind of excuse the ones in LA away if you're diligent enough at your language, But it was just frustrating, because I think back to those series last year when they were going through their bad stretch, and the series in Pittsburgh or the series in New York were maddening, I think is a better word, and just like, wow, this is all going very poorly. I don't know that those were as frustrating, though. This was just very frustrating because, like you said, it really did seem like they were putting guys on and just nobody could get a hit with somebody on base. There was, five home runs going foul by inches, hard hit balls, of course, finding every single glove, and
terrible.
Yeah, just a very frustrating series.
I think there was a tweet. I'm forgetting who it was, but it was in it was one of the big boys. I think I don't know if it was Olney or if it was I forget who it was now. But going into I believe Tuesday's game, the Cubs had put the most runners in scoring position in Major League Baseball, and they also have left the most runners on base in scoring position in baseball. So it's like, in one area they're doing well, in the other area they're just completely atrocious. But an article came out on FanGraphs today. Actually, a lot has happened today, Corey. We have a lot on FanGraphs and a lot of interviews from Theo and Madden and whatnot. But let's first start with the FanGraphs article by Dave Cameron, titled "What's Wrong with the Cubs?" And he broke it into three different sections. He started off with Kyle Schwarber and Addison Russell, basically both producing 73 and 70 WRC pluses, respectively. And he also touched on the defense being a lot worse this year, and then finished off with essentially what we talked about the last few weeks in the poor starting pitching. Just touch on some of the topics he brought up. The first one I want to mention is the defense. And basically last year the Cubs saved about 11% more runs than what they should have given up on defense alone. And that was attributed towards Dexter Fowler being somewhat of an average center fielder defensively, not offensively, so defensively. And then you have the work of Baez at third base and even Bryant in the outfield. So last year, the outfield in particular was especially strong. Now this year, it's gone the complete opposite direction. So even though Hayward's playing in right field more, Albert Amora has been a complete, at least in terms of UZR, a complete disaster. His UZR per 150 is negative 10, which is one of the worst in the league for center fielders. And whereas Bryant last year was a positive defender in left field, Schwarber is basically league average. So, I mean, that's actually a good thing for Schwarber considering most think he's a poor defender, and Uzier, I think he's basically about average. But we, Corey, you and I have watched most of these games, and I'm shocked that Almora's score is that low. Like, I don't see him not getting to balls that should be caught, right? Like, do you see that?
Well, in a long line of things that I can't believe we're sitting here talking about, we've mentioned a few of them already. This is one of them. I mean, I read this piece, and I know we've talked about this before, and that he, you know, had rated poorly in the early going, and you know, maybe we were, you know, wondering if that was just an anomaly or, you know, because of playing time, who knows? But, you know, we're pretty deep into the season here. If you had asked me just on the eye test, I mean, I wouldn't have said that. I mean, granted, we're watching on TV, so we can't necessarily see the breaks that they're getting or even often where they're positioned. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, I wouldn't have said that. I'd be surprised if anybody had said that. You know, and as I said to you, I think when we talked about it earlier after reading the Fangraphs piece, I would have, you know, if you had told me he wasn't an elite defender or even in the top of the league, I would have said, oh, you know, that's surprising. I was expecting more from him. You know, league average, I would have said, wow, that's, you know, strange. You know, something's really going on there. This, though, it's pretty shocking, you know, and I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but as he's played more, you do kind of realize how, like, sneakily slow he is. Yeah. Like,
especially
often if he'll
first base,
like. Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. Like, he'll hit a ball that, you know, and I think we all kind of in our head can picture a ball hit on the ground, you know, with a runner on first, where you know right away, oh, they can't double up Chris, or they can't double up Wilson, or they can't double up Javi, right? You can just sort of tell right away, like, ah, okay, that's, you know, it's a fielder's choice.
Yeah.
Al will hit those same balls, and you're thinking, like, no, I think Al's fast, right? And he'll get thrown out by, you know, several feet.
Yeah.
And it's happened recently where you're like, whoa, like, he's pretty slow. So I don't know if that has to do with it. But, yeah, I mean, him being that bad is definitely surprising. I mean, he's rating worse than Schwarber, you know, and we're not the people to rag on Schwarber's defense. I think he's mostly fine out there. But, you know, ranking that much worse than Schwarber, I mean, something is up.
Right, and it's not the reason for the poor rating is not because of any errors he's made. He's actually about league average in the error department, which means he's really not making any errors. The reason for the poor score is directly tied to his range. So he has a poor range score, which suggests that he's not getting two balls that most adequate center fielders are able to get to. I don't know. I mean, it's possible that I'm missing some of these plays, but from the games I've watched, Corey, and I think he's been fine. And even Schwarber too. Like, Schwarber's score rates out as I would expect based on some of the plays he's made, and he's actually made some decent plays, I thought, leaving his feet. But that's surprising. And with Theo's interview today, I believe he was on The Score talking to them. Was that right?
Yep.
Okay. Theo today was talking about demotions and, in particular, Russell and Schwarber's recent woes and even Ian Happ's adjustment. But, I mean, we're not looking at maybe Almora getting demoted and keeping Happ up, right? Like, do you think they would pull the trigger on that?
You know? I don't know. I mean, they don't play Al very much.
And we talked about this a few weeks ago, saying that's very telling that
Hopkins is getting
the majority of the starts in the center field, even with John Jay in right field. Like, that makes
sense. I still think it is, you know, and it's just one of those things, too, where, you know, you have these arguments about various players, and I'm certainly a proponent of the notion that, you know, if there's not some magic thing that happens in the minors that guys just, you know, get better. You have to have something, like, particularly specific that they can work on, knowing that they're not facing the same competition level. So it's not as simple as just sending guys down. Like, yeah, they're probably going to do better in AAA. Like, what does that do? Yeah. Right. But Al, you know, I look at it as one of those guys where it's like, you know, I would probably benefit from playing every day. You know, I think it's not a situation I ever expected to be in. He was one of the guys that I think a lot of us thought would
kind of break out in a way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not necessarily to the level of, you know, someone like Bryant or Baez or Russell when he's not hitting 210. But yeah, I think we expected some better stuff from him. And, you know, look, to be frank, if his defensive rating is that low, and, you know, I don't know how Joe and the coaching staff perceive it, and, you know, you'd have to get into a whole thing about these defensive metrics. But, you know, that was kind of the saving grace for him being on the team, right, is that they would turn to him when they wanted to sort of lock things down. And if he was playing, you're kind of going with the Hayward argument from last year, not that Al would hit as poorly as Hayward did last year, but you're kind of like, whatever, we want him in there because he's going to play good defense, he's going to anchor center field, and if he's in the lineup, we don't care really what is going on at the plate. He's out there, you know, for that and the base running. So yeah, I mean, I could definitely see a spot with it. I do think that Hap is also one of those guys who seems to have somewhat of an issue that might be benefited by going down. That being said, he can probably work on it here. I just would prefer Joe not hit him fifth in the order while he's doing it.
It's been a weird situation.
Very strange
with these lineups,
you know, and actually, like, I feel like I like merge from like anger and disappointment to
like WTF.
Well, not even necessarily. I use it all the time, but there's that GIF, you know, all over the internet, and you can find it on Twitter, where it's from the bet episode of Seinfeld, mm-hmm. where I think it's Elaine is dropping the money off at Jerry's house, and he's just smoking the cigar and laughing and like cackling. At least I think that's the episode it's from. I don't know.
Is it Jerry?
That's kind of how.
Huh? I don't think it's Jerry that's doing that. But
it is Jerry. He has a cigar in his mouth. He's like laughing. Maybe it's a different episode, but it's Jerry. Okay. And, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. I was reading through some of the stuff today, and I find it absolutely hilarious the way that some people are reacting to this, just this whole situation. And I don't like watching them lose, but the way that people the way that people have internalized some of this and are expressing themselves is quite amusing. And I think that's a good time to read this quote from that interview that you were mentioning with Theo, which is, if you listen to our last episode, pretty similar to something that I said, like almost verbatim. And, you know, I said to you earlier, it's not surprising because I believe it's true. And I think that it's just sort of the literal truth, whether you as a fan want to accept it or not. And, you know, this part is paraphrasing from the article on 670 The Score .com from the interview that I think was, I want to mention the show, it was Spiegel and Parkins on 670 The Score.
They do great interviews, by the way. I try to tune in like weekly. I mean, they ask great questions. So if you don't listen to them, I highly recommend to do so.
Yeah. And one phrase that he's used and that I really love and speaks to this point is that this is not a linear process, right? Because they won 97 games in 2015 and then 103 the next year, that does not mean that the next year is going to keep going in that direction.
Right.
Ask any other team in the league, ask any other champion. Like, that's not really how it works most of the time.
And we mentioned curves too, Corey, which is funny.
Yes. And so I'm going to read this next part is a direct quote from Theo on that, you know, idea. And he says, the fact that guys adjusted really quickly to the big leagues, developed really quickly, faced adversity under the brightest spotlights, played great baseball, overcame so much, overcame centuries worth of issues, and won a World Series, I guess it doesn't necessarily mean we're still not just prone to the laws of nature and reality and baseball. That's what we're in right now. The only freakish thing about it is that it's fairly across the board, and we have a number of guys going through, and that just means we have to work that much harder to dig out of it. Brendan, I'm pretty sure that is exactly what I said 3 days ago. And again, it's not to make an excuse. It's not to sugarcoat the way they've been playing. It's not to do any of that. They have played, I don't know if they've played like dog poop, all right? And no one's going to tell you otherwise, right? They just got swept by the Padres. Even if I was the biggest Cubs apologist in the world, which I don't think I am, I couldn't sell that to you, right? Like getting swept by the Padres is pretty much devalues any argument to the contrary. But it's exactly what we were saying on the last show. You have a number of guys who are very young. Kyle Schwarber is still, since we last talked, not at a full 162 games in his MLB career. And you've had Russell, who's been in the league for, you know, what, a little bit near 2 years?
Yeah, about over two years now.
This is just how it works. We should all be, you know, I think instead of freaking out, we should all be thanking our lucky stars that it sort of worked out the way that it
and
did.
And that's what I was saying last podcast. Like, you know, it was almost like going into last year, I was genuinely concerned that we would see something like this right now. And
right.
Yeah. Like,
well, imagine last year, right? If pick one of the young guys that did well and don't, you know, look, I understand like Addison Russell wasn't, you know, the best offensive player in the league last year. Right. But he was a very valuable player and it was good enough. Right.
He was about league average offensively regardless of his defense.
So pick one of those guys, be it Russell, Schwarber, Baez, whoever you want. Right. And take make their performance like, you know, worse, but put it last year. Who knows how that goes?
Yeah.
You know? And obviously they win the division handily and all that stuff, but it all went right last year. And I don't think that's luck. I don't think it's anything but good timing. It's just like, you know, some of these games where we've seen, you know, what was that? Was that Hendricks? No, it was Lester. Sorry, I'm thinking of the Lester start on Sunday. You know, where he gave up two home runs at really bad times. Both times there were two guys on base, right? If he makes those pitches and they're solo home runs, that game is completely different. And I think it's similar to what you're dealing with here. Like last year, Kyle Schwarber was ahead of the curve as far as how he was being pitched and all that other stuff. I mean, obviously only in the World Series, but, you know, Russell, same thing. Baez, you know, growing into that as he's, you know, not as young as some of the other guys. You know, even when Almora came up, like all these guys, and Brian's been doing it the minute he came in the league, he's been ahead of the curve, right? Now they're behind. It just is how it is. Baseball is a game of adjustments. I know I mentioned to you, I think when we went off the air the last time, you know, like go look at Anthony Rizzo's numbers when he started with the Padres and then his first year in Chicago. Because that wasn't a linear, like he started at 200 and now he's an MVP candidate. It didn't go that way. Okay. So like, that's just how it is with these guys.
When Rizzo made his debut with the Padres in 2011, he had 153 plate appearances. He batted 141 with a 248 wOBA, one of the worst stretches any player has ever started his career with 150 plate appearances. And, after his rookie year with the Cubs, he had 690 plate appearances, batted 233 with a 325 wOBA, and particularly struggled against lefties. And some were calling him the next Adam LaRoche and that the Cubs should platoon him.
And be honest with me, how many of you listening wanted Andrew Cashner back? All right.
those were legit debates, too.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the point. And again, this isn't to sugarcoat this, and we've said it 1,000 times. Brendan and I do not like watching them play like garbage. But I think we reach a certain point where we have to approach this from a rational perspective. Now, what do you do about it is a separate question, right? And I think we can have many debates on that, and I think we can get into a couple. You know, but like I said, they are where they are. They're two games under. I believe they're three back now
of
the Brewers who won today. And they've got the Cardinals coming in. They've got 110 games to figure it out and be good enough to screw around in the playoffs. And I was thinking this last night, but when the Cubs were in the NLDS with the Giants and in the middle of game four, we're getting diced by Matt Moore of all people, and Joe Buck, and I already forget who he does the games with now, but they're talking about,
it was Smoltz.
Smoltz, right. And they're talking about Cueto and Lester, game five, back at Wrigley. How many of you listening, or even just you, Brendan, were thinking to themselves, oh, well, the Giants only won 88 games and we're a wild card team. Like, who cares?
It's true.
Right? It does not matter. Same thing with the Dodgers. What did the Dodgers win? 92 games. They only won the division because the Giants bullpen literally blew 20 games down the stretch in the NL West. Did anybody care that the Cubs finished 10 games ahead of the Dodgers last year? Everybody was watching that going, do we want to go back and face Kershaw down 3-2 in Chicago? No. Right. So let's win game five. So just, again, it's not going to be as easy as last year. They're not going to win 103 games. They're not going to be, you know, blowing people out every day. Like, we got to, again, 110 games to figure it out, make the moves, change the lineup, change the rotation, whatever you want to do. But at this point, like Theo said, it's where we are, and you just got to get yourself in a spot by October.
Well, it comes down, and going back to the Dave Cameron article, I think he did a good job summarizing the issues, but it really comes down to a few things, and it's centered around run prevention. And last year, the Cubs were historically the best defensive team, at least according to the measures we have now, of all time. Like, that's, like, of all time. I'm not sensationalizing that whatsoever. So just to put perspective into that. And so, look, we've seen some of the defensive issues in the infield with Russell's throws and Baez's miscues, and even Bryant letting a few get away from him. And we know the defense has not been fine-tuned. Now, can the defense turn it around? I mean, I think so. If Russell's shoulder is really not bothering him, I think he can, even with a bum shoulder, he's still been above average. But, you know, you put an infield out there with Bryant, Russell, and Baez, that's one of the best infields in the league. So I think that turns around. So I don't think the defense will be this bad going forward. And then in terms of the hitting, I mean, everyone besides Zobrist, Bryant, and Rizzo have been shaky. I mean, Baez has been good, but he hasn't been playing consistently. Then even Rizzo, you know, a 347 wOBA, which is what he has this year, it's still not to the level where we need to create a lot of runs. So everything is really slacking at the moment. But if you're going to ask me if the defense will improve going forward, I would say absolutely yes. And if you're going to ask me if the offense will improve going forward, based on Rizzo's trajectory, I think he'll get more base hits soon. And based on what we know about Schwarber's talent level, and, you know, he's going through some adjustments right now, but the guy is hitting 500-foot homers once a week. So, you know, the talent's there. It's, you have 110 more games left. And the division, you don't need to win 103 games this year. Even 90 games might be enough for this division. And you get into the playoffs, and anything can happen. So we just got to be patient with this. And then even the pitching, Corey, I mean, this has been a constant topic, and I think it still deserves the most attention. But I've been encouraged by the pitching the last 2 weeks. I really have been. I think Arrieta's looked better. I think even John Lackey, of all people, has looked, you know, at times bad, but other times decent. And, you know, we'll see what happens in that fifth spot. But
when and you know, to his credit, you know, Lackey's been getting a lot of whiffs. And, you know, again, seems to be, in some of these games, just a victim of bad timing and sequencing and all that other stuff.
Right.
So I'll throw it to you. I don't know that we ever gave, like, a definitive point on this, but it appears to be the main topic of conversation here. What does Brendan Miller do with Kyle Schwarber?
So you have, the main topic is, okay, do you bat in second, right? That's that's kind of where it comes down to. And now,
and again, I want to reiterate before we really get into this, this man has played not even really close to a full season of Major League Baseball games. Right. So let's just clarify that.
All right. So do you bat him second? Do you expose the Cubs to potentially poor starts or producing less runs a game and losing more games at the expense of giving Schwarber more opportunities to adjust, right? So I think that's one area that we kind of forget, is that by Schwarber batting second, you're going to give the man more chances to get it together. So that's one argument you can make for batting Schwarber second. Obviously, the counter to that is if you bat him second and he continues to struggle, that's going to screw the Cubs over, and it actually may put him in more of a mental handicap, so to speak, right? So what do I think the Cubs should do? I know, Corey, you want to move him down. I get that. But who do you move up to second? You know, like,
Who would you put? You well, put I mean, it, I mean, it depends on the day, but I mean, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna probably put Jason Hayward there.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so Jason Hayward batting second. I mean, he's having.
But yeah,
a
if Baez is playing, I would probably put Baez there, honestly. Okay,
well, if Baez plays,
which Zobrist, is nuts. Trust Zobrist me, Zobrist it came out of my mouth, and immediately I'm like, oh my god, like where are we right now?
But like Zobrist may have to sit. I mean, you can't play Baez every right. day with Zobrist in there every day as well. So,
right.
I mean, you don't have many other options. You really don't. I mean, like you could bat Bryant second and Rizzo third and put, I don't know, someone like Contreras fourth. Like, yeah, that's an option. But even Contreras has been struggling a little bit. So for me, the answer to your question is what I would do is I would tend to lead towards keeping him there for the sake of consistency. Now,
riding the storm out, brother.
I know, but like the other option is like mixed. I don't see. I always struggle with these answers because there is an emotional and psychological component of the game that we just can never know. And only one person in that dugout knows, and that's Joe Maddon. Right. So I struggle with these concepts. I think the entire concept of lineup construction is psychological, and even in terms of pitchers pitching to certain batters a certain way because of the batter's protection behind them, like Rizzo batting behind Bryant, for example. So I think it's all very psychological, and you don't want to mess with it too much. But from what I've seen with Schwarber, and I think Theo did a good job summarizing up, is that he at times looks really good, and he gets around the ball, and he hits it, like I said, almost 500 feet, and then other times he looks completely lost. So that's not mechanical per se. So I want to get Schwarber on the right track as fast as possible. I personally don't buy into the idea that batting him sixth or seventh takes the pressure off of him. We saw how that didn't do a thing for Hayward last year. So I don't buy into that idea. So yeah, I'm gonna ride out the Schwarber train for just one more week. I think if you give him more opportunities, he may come out of it faster, and then we'll go from there. So talk to me in one more week.
Okay. I don't think that moving him down you know, changes the pressure for him.
That's what one of the Sun Times articles.
I'm aware.
That was garbage.
No, like, I would be Brendan. I would be shocked to learn that Sun Times writer was hard on Jason Hayward when he was struggling last year in the seven hole.
Like
or
not
whatever,
to
right?
not, to,
he,
not to harp on you know the some of these papers. But the Sun Times in particular, I'm just gonna say it, they're trash. Like if you read that and you come away like feeling even a little bit smarter, then like do a self analysis. Like that what I read today was complete garbage.
Well, and that was the article where he was making the argument that it's like the Cubs' fault because they put a poster of Schwarber outside the stadium.
Like they literally said that they were marketing him too much, so it screwed him up mentally. Like they literally said that.
Right.
So
I don't really agree with that. That's also where we get into the issue of like they did win the World Series, right? They are going to celebrate that, and Kyle Schwarber was an enormous part of that.
And it's funny too, because
and I can promise you, Brendan, just from my general sense of knowledge, common sense here, Kyle Schwarber's performance on the field has absolutely nothing to do with the way he is marketed by the Chicago Cubs. That's nuts. Totally nuts. Yeah.
And
I think, pressure. Brendan, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it probably has to do with the fact that he's 23 years old and MLB pitchers, get this, are pretty good.
I think it's pretty hard to hit fastballs that are like 5 inches away from your wrist.
I've heard that.
I've heard that. I mean, when I play video games, I personally struggle getting the MLB Show wedge up in that area. So I can only imagine what it's like in real life. But like, I could not believe what I was reading, especially the whole this pressure concept. Of course, every single Major League Baseball starting, even bench player, has pressure. Look, there are 25 spots on this roster, and for the most part, like give or take, 12 to 13 of those guys are hitters. Everyone is always vying for their job, unless you're Chris right. Bryant or Rizzo. Like, there's pressure every day. So shut the hell up.
I said this the last time. This is similar to the sort of semi-screaming I was doing last week, sort of telling people to get away from me if you have a particular take about their effort or their drive or anything like that. Do you really like believe that pressure has something to do with it? They just won the World Series. They were down 3-1 in the World Series as a franchise that was known as like the biggest choke artists in the history of sports. So the post accomplishing that pressure is harder than that? No. Okay.
It's like, more likely.
I'm not in the clubhouse, so yeah. I can't speak from anecdotal experience here, but full stop.
No. You know how lazy of an argument that is? That is the laziest argument you could possibly make, that there's too much pressure. There's so many factors that go into hitting a baseball: psychological, mechanical, timing, plate approach, data, so many things that go into successfully barreling up on a baseball. And for the most part, at one time when you're slumping, all of it piles up at one time. You can never be perfect at one time unless you're Mike Trout, Chris Bryant. So that is the laziest argument. If you're going to go out there and spew that there's too much pressure or their attitude's not there or they don't want it enough, just get out of here. Don't even give me that. That's ridiculous.
We do. If you do think that, though, we do still want you to subscribe and review
on iTunes. Correct.
Just don't tweet the takes at us. Just keep them away. But no. Look, I mean, it's baseball, man. It's just baseball. There's, you know, we all. I think a lot of people were thinking of a Cubs Indians rematch. You know, the Indians are four games under over 500.
Still could happen, Corey.
I just mean it's like, you know, everybody has these aims on how it's gonna go. And you know, if it stood right now, I don't think you'd expect either of those teams in the World Series, although the Indians are doing better than the Cubs.
That's actually a good point. I want to mention that, too, because I was going to, but I forgot. So when the Indians went to the World Series last year, let me remind you that they had Bauer and Tomlin pitching in long series for them because Carlos Carrasco and Danny Salazar were injured.
When they even had, I'm blanking on his name now, but whoever had to start that game in Toronto.
I don't even know.
Something with an M, maybe. I'm not up on my Cleveland Indians.
The point I'm making here is that once you get to the playoffs, crazy stuff happens. And it can be more like a roll of the dice. And you go back to a lot of the quotes Theo was putting out to the media back in 2013, 2014. Theo's goal has always been get to the playoffs 8 out of 10 times, and hopefully a few of those go your way. Because once you get into these 5 and 7 game series, it is so random at times. I mean, you have David Ross hitting a homer off Andrew Miller. Like,
right.
Like, what? And then you have Arrieta going yard off of Madison Bumgarner. Like, you know how many, you know what the probability of that happening is? Like, I would probably guess less than 1%. And another point, you have, like, you know, the Cubs coming back in the top of the ninth, down 3 against the Giants and winning that. The win probability for the Giants was like 99%. So there is so much crazy stuff that happens in baseball. Win 88 to 92 games in this division. You're going to get there. You're going to get a shot. Stay healthy. Get these young guys ahead of the aging curve.
Well, and that's one of the weirder takes that I've read and heard that, you know, they're lucky to be in the – almost like it's a derogatory thing that they're lucky to be in a division that's performing this badly. And so – The 2016 Cubs needed, what, 90 wins to win the division? They won 103. They didn't need the extra 13, but they got them anyway.
Yeah.
In 2015, you had three teams win 97 or above. Two of those teams had to play each other in the wild card game. The division is different every year. The 2003 Chicago Cubs win, I believe, 88 games and are, as some of you may remember, and I think now it's fine to – point this out, we're 5 outs from World Series. So that doesn't matter.
The following year, they won 89 and they missed the playoffs.
Right. You got to take – the field is what the field is, right? Like, it just doesn't matter. You just have to approach whatever is in front of you. And, yeah, look, if the Cardinals or Brewers were on a run right now, we'd be in a much different spot. We'd be having a different conversation, but that's not what's happening. So we have to approach it that way. And it goes to what Theo was saying about this whole process being linear, right? You know, for guys like Bryant and Russell, the Cubs will control them for, you know, around 6 years. Who knows how that'll actually play out. But, you know, you're looking at that process, right? Basically 2015, I guess, is the starting point, even though that was not supposed to be the starting point. And around 2020 or 2021 will probably be the end point, at least for this particular core group, probably earlier than that, perhaps, but who knows. You have to look at it like you would look at the San Francisco Giants of the last 7 years. And apologies for always bringing them up, but I'll counter any you know, thoughts on that by saying we got to talk about the World Series club here, right? We're in it now, so that's who we have to compare ourselves to.
Not a bad thing to compare to.
It is not, right. You would look back at this period, right, and you would call it a resounding success for the San Francisco Giants, their front office, their fans, and their organization. In a seven-year period, they had been to the playoffs, I believe, 4 times. They won the World Series 3 times. At the end of the day, you don't look back and go, well, yeah, but, you know, 2014 was terrible. So what? You know, no, that's not how you want it to go. You want to win it every year. You want to be competitive every year. But you have to take these groups of players. It's not a linear thing, and it is not a one-off, you know. It's a process. It's a journey. There's going to be years that are plagued by poor performance. There will be years that are plagued by injury. There will be years like 2016 where it's plagued by nothing. It's just goodness from the minute they step on the field.
Yeah.
And so I don't say that to mean like, oh, well, if they, you know, win 80 games and miss the playoffs, whatever, right? They'll win it next year. No, but it's you have to look at the whole thing. And the whole thing is not just 1 year. You can't boil it down to 1 year. They don't build the team for 1 year, right? That Theo and Jed and Jason did not build this team just for 2016. They built it for forever, really, not like literally, but they built it to build a strong organization.
For a decade. They built it for
right, that is able to do this on a yearly basis.
Correct.
and to replenish the system and to bring a different era of baseball to Chicago. And that's what I think you have to judge this all on. And I think this is going to be just a part of it.
Yeah.
Look, how many of you, I wouldn't be. Look, I'll say it right now. We probably said it last year when they were going through that stretch, you know, and I know you said it like exactly as it happened. I think during one of those shows you said like, you know, who will it surprise if they win, you know, 15 of the next 20, like coming out of the All-Star break, and they literally did. So I'll just, you know, like, let's just go ahead and get crazy here, right? I think we're at the low point. I pray this is the low point. If getting swept by the Padres and being two under is not the low point, prayers to
everybody, I will do the next show completely, we'll
get that. You know, like, would it surprise anybody if they win 88 to 90 games and just win the World Series again? No, I can already hear Joe Buck talking about it now while the Dodgers are sulking off the field. And everybody just – they'll hate – imagine how much people will hate the Cubs even more,
Corey,
if they go in and steal a World Series.
Did you
right?
see? Did you see Agon today? I'm watching MLB Network as we're doing this, and as you were saying, sulking. Agon was arguing with the umpire in like a very complaining fashion. And I know
did
you
he
would
tweet about
that.
It. Let me check.
I don't know, but you should check that out.
I love it.
But yeah, no, you're exactly right. Also, I do want to bring this up too, and I was talking to Matt about it, Matt Klapp on Twitter from the Block Finds, and there's a weird part of me that's like, first off, I really admired last year's group to adjust extremely fast and essentially be good for the entirety of the year at such a young age. Like, that was very admirable to me. But there is another side to me that's, it's like almost like a morbid curiosity to see how this team would respond to failure of this magnitude. Like, we know the character when they're riding high and they're able to have consistent success, but what about the opposite? Like, what we don't know about this team is how they really respond to months of failure, of tough stretches. And we saw little glimpses of it last year, but nothing like this. So I'm not going to say that it's a good thing.
He really did retweet something about the umpire. I'm not even kidding.
Are you kidding?
I'm assuming the umpire was Marty Foster. I know Marty Foster's an umpire. This is in Spanish. I apologize. I do speak Spanish, but I don't read it well enough to claim I know what this says. He retweeted something from one of the Spanish broadcasters. It looks like on ESPN about Marty Foster. I mean, come on. You know, I was kidding. You know what I mean? Like, he literally runs to Twitter and tweets about any – what a baby.
Yeah.
Adrian the Baby Gonzalez, not Brendan, not a friend of the podcast.
No, especially not a
at
friend
all.
Of
an enemy
the
of the
family.
Podcast.
Yes. But just to wrap up my final thoughts, and I'll throw it to you to finish it up. But there, like I was saying, there's a part of me that wants to see how this team responds to long-term failure. And I think it's a good growing process. I really do. And I think ultimately I would not be surprised by the end of the year when Madden points to this time stretch of being one of the most important stretches that this team has faced, because it taught them to respond to adversity or adjust or be, as Madden loves, uncomfortable. So this could be, it's weird to say, but it could be a growing point. It could be a good thing for the Cubs in the long term, and I think it will be. I think this team has way too much talent to be this, to be playing 500 baseball. It just won't happen. So, Corey, I'll throw it to you to wrap us up.
It's a lot easier to call this a growing point when you just won the World Series.
Oh my God, yes.
I don't know that argument would fly as well.
Yeah.
But no, I don't really have the only thing I would say, and I think we I at least can finish on is the Chicago Cubs are three games out of a playoff spot. They have 110 games left. They are back at Wrigley Field, a fresh, newly engaged Anthony Rizzo back at Wrigley Field. They've got Dexter Fowler and the Cardinals in. 110 games left to find your way into October and be playing good enough ball by that time. You know, since I don't like the current one they use, I think it's about time we revert to, one of our old hashtags. Let's go.
On that note, we'll talk to you guys after the Cardinals series. And again, you can find the Cubs Related podcast on iTunes if you search Cubs Related, or even Chicago Cubs podcast will be up there. And again, please rate us, leave us feedback. It does us a lot of good, and we will definitely appreciate it. Talk to you guys soon.